sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
How are you going to hire somebody at a wage you could barely afford, if that, with a process you've never done yourself? You don't know what's there. And then we just started talking again. I'm like, instead of taking this time with me now, why don't you call 10 people in the ICP? Oh, my brother has it. He's like, the last 3 months I've been managing engineers. Mind you, not an engineer. He's like, well, you run a company called Rev Genius, so revenue is first for you. I said, it's first for your investors too, sir. Like, what do you... He asked me for a recommendation for a salesperson. I said, absolutely not. I am not going to give you a sitting duck. You make it a situation that I feel good that they have a chance in heck to last 6 to 9 months in. I said, you and I both know he or she is out in 3 months. If you could afford that. I'm like, I'm not giving you that person. Sorry.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Jared Robin, and Jared's the co-founder of the Rev Genius community. And in our conversation today, Jared and I cover a lot of ground, starting with a discussion around the growth of the community in the sales world. Everybody's probably familiar with at least one or two of these communities that have sprung up recently. And Jared's going to take us through the story of Rev Genius's founding, and he talks further about its mission and how it's serving its members. We also dig into what's behind the rise of this community in sales and talk about how they've become a necessity for many sellers who aren't receiving the kind of support they need for the development of their careers from their employers. And we also explore the specific types of support that sellers are most looking for from Rev Genius. So all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Jared, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could also give us your feedback on how we're doing in the form of a review. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it. Jared, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me, Andy.
Well, it's a pleasure to finally meet you and talk with you. So you're upstate New York right now, right? Escape the city. A little summer break.
It's lovely. Upstate in Highland, New York. I won't give the exact address, but a really lovely place. And coming from the city, oh man, my partner and I are talking about moving out here pretty much every night we go to sleep. We're just here short term.
Oh, well, get yourself a weekend place. That's then what everybody does in the city, right? Everybody does in New York City. They all have their second places.
Yeah, I need to first be successful enough to be able to afford it. But we'll get there. We'll get to that point.
There is that. I mean, for people that maybe aren't familiar with, you know, with Manhattan, the city is, it's, I don't know what your experience is, but certainly someone who lives in Manhattan, at least part-time, is the summer's nice because you can actually go to a restaurant. You don't have to wait to get a table. I mean, everybody's pretty much gone upstate.
So in general, that's correct. But COVID just so happened to let up a bit, you know, this summer. Yeah. So it's slightly the opposite, but still everybody's going everywhere. And, you know, without going too tangential, Airbnb is going through the roof as a result, right?
Oh, yeah.
In terms of bookings, yeah.
Well, I was just telling someone last week, I was looking for my wife and I to do a little bit of a weekend getaway. We haven't done one for, you know, a year plus, like lots of people. Even though we have things scheduled later this year, but in the immediate. So we're just looking here, yeah, along the California coast, Southern California, you know, sort of nice hotel. And first of all, the rates are about three times the normal, mm-hmm. and they are just unavailable. So, yeah, everybody's getting back into it.
It was a sneaky time to do an IPO, right? At first, everyone's like, "What with them?" And then, like very quickly after, they're like, "Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, smart."
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about Rev Genius. So. Sure. Where'd the idea come from to start Rev Genius? And I'm sort of curious because I mean, it's not like there aren't other sales communities out there. I counted at least dozens. 11. If you include AAISP, I mean, we got Sales Hacker, Rev Collective, Modern Sales Pro Bravado, Sales blah blah. It's all sorts of Sales Hustle, War Room, Bonfire, Sales Community. So.
And that's just probably Googling. Like, if you know the nitty gritty deep end, there's probably another dozen that.
Is there really? Oh, you have to give me those names. Those are the ones that I was familiar with.
I have a spreadsheet Excel. Somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. That I get the emails from every day.
Sure.
So, what drove this idea to start something?
Yeah. That's.
Yeah. You know, in this space.
So a year ago, to the month, last May, but you know, give or mm-hmm. take. Galem and I, co-founder of Rev Genius, mm-hmm. met at a bunch of webinars. We kept seeing each other at a ton of webinars at the beginning of COVID. I had no job. She has a job, okay, at the mm-hmm. time. So she's showing up to quote-unquote level up. I'm mm-hmm. showing up because I'm just trying to get my foot in anywhere at the time. The market was – saying it was bad was an understatement for quite a few months for quite a few people.
Yeah, so, understandably, right.
So eventually we realized there's dozens and dozens and dozens of digital activities that we want to go to that are speaking to us from dozens and dozens and dozens of different places. And it feels very fragmented, whether you're a SaaS company with really good content mm-hmm. to help you, whether you're a trainer with really good content that could help you, whether you're a community with really good content. And you know, she saw me, we saw each other, you know, in the Zoom meetings and the same chats, connected on LinkedIn and had a conversation away from that. And we're like, okay, what's needed? It feels like something's needed. And she's entrepreneurial. I'm entrepreneurial mm-hmm. and out of a job at the time. And, we're like, well, there needs to be a centralized platform for all these events. Okay, how does it look? Eventbrite for sales and marketing events.
Right.
Got it. How do we make money? Like Eventbrite, charge a percentage for ticket prices, right? So this is our first idea. And we're like, this is great because we're the ICP. We like all this stuff from all these areas. Why can't it just come in a single thing? You were just mm-hmm. talking about how many emails you get. Imagine if there's just one digest. And then, okay, so now you actually want to go to all this. You click yes to dozens of things because you're out of work in COVID. And you can't even show up to all of them, even if you wanted to, because they're on different platforms. Some of them send the Google calendar. Some don't. Some you have mm-hmm. to add. Sometimes you forget. Sometimes mm-hmm. they forget. And it's just discombobulated, right? And it's a lot of good content. So we're like, okay. A blessing in disguise happened. I had a friend, the old CTO of a company I used to work with, early stage guy, brought a business to Techstars, smart, sharp guy. He's like, Jared, I'll build your MVP. We'll build it on WordPress. Mm-hmm. And this Eventbrite for sales and marketing. He's like, I'll do you a solid. And what happened was he got busy, God forbid, and it fell through because we're not his top priority. Oh no!
Right.
And so what Galen and I did was
free is not his top priority.
I mean, there had been we've been super helpful and good friends in the past, back and forth, but 100%. And you know, after a couple weeks of this, I'm like, okay, it's not happening. So how do we do this? Technical salespeople. Like every Sunday, Galen was putting all of the events we curated onto a Google Sheet. Okay, cool. Not the prettiest, but it's something. Mm-hmm. How do we get people to see it? How do we get people to understand? And we're like, well, we need to have a group of people. We where at this point I'm buying into LinkedIn personal branding a year ago. I'm like, I need to do everything to get a job. I'm going to post every day. I've read Justin Welsh's amazing LinkedIn playbook. And a year ago, now he's beyond belief, but like a year ago was really potent and poignant.
Right.
And I'm posting every day and I'm meeting other people. You know, we're becoming friends in the comment section. So we're like, okay, let's start a group chat on LinkedIn, and every Sunday we'll share this with them. And what we realized fast was, one, we're not sure if they're looking at it.
Right.
And two, they sure as heck are talking a lot to each other. And and they really like each other. And these people, which the group is now 38, April or May last year in LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, this feels like a community. Let's look at the community space. Let's see if it makes sense. And at the time, maybe we were dumb not knowing everything, but we're like, there's four main players. And you said that there's 11, 12 now. We're like, there's four. There's Revenue Collective.
Right.
Okay. Revenue Collective, paid exclusive. Got it. That's how we mark them. Mm-hmm. They're Sales Hacker, as you said. At the time, they didn't have the on-site community. So we're like, content, got them.
Right.
Content. And up until a year ago, that's exactly what they were. And or mostly anyway. We're like Modern Sales Pros, accessible, no cost, but a bit of exclusivity and email based.
Yeah.
Got them. And Bravado. And we're like, we don't really know what they are, but it doesn't. Yeah. So we're like, we have a bunch of friends here. We feel like there's no truly inclusive. And when I say truly inclusive, like not just white men running it. I hate to say that, but like think about a year ago. Jeez. So you get it. But like also accessible. Accessible to us meant free or low cost.
Right.
And so we're like, okay, cool. There's a gap. Right or not, we're like, we saw this gap, and maybe we didn't have, maybe fortunate that we didn't know everything. Because then simultaneously, LinkedIn is, the app is breaking for everybody because everybody's talking so darn much on it that it's literally closing out. They're like, y'all need to go to Slack. So they told us to go to Slack. Along the way, we picked out a name. I remember when we picked out the name of GDS, we had this group, we had this idea. And then one day we're like, oh, y'all, want to let you know, we're going to rename this chat Rev Genius. Is that cool? And they're like, yeah. We're like, cool, done.
Yeah.
And then we just went. So that's literally how it started. And sure enough, when we started asking people like, hey, like join Rev Genius, they're like, oh, what about this? What about that? And we're just like, inclusive, no cost, sales, marketing, and now RevOps. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, let's go. And because like everybody in our group had a really good energy, and you know, the first 500 or 1,000 people, we wanted to let everybody in, but we also wanted to ask certain people first to come in, right? To build this energy, because we knew if we scaled, heavens allowing, that we wanted to set the pace with the first few hundred or few thousand members to be able to help moderate, like to know like what was cool, what wasn't, and the energy that we wanted. And we wanted an empathetic vibe, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And this was important. In my career, 15 years in sales, never felt like I had a safe place. And I'm a white male, like in the companies I was with, I'm a majority. Right. And I felt like, I had to be buttoned up all the time. And I worked for Fortune 100 for my first 7. I can only imagine if you didn't look like me. And sure enough, the story started coming in. And and I was able to start empathizing and imagining and seeing. And so we made that like part of it as well. Like being like, hey, come here and have a space.
Right.
So that's the medium of it.
Okay, so we'll take us to today. So how many members do you have, and answer what does Rev Genius look like? If people aren't familiar with it, just describe what it looks like if they go to your website.
So so today Rev Genius is still in Slack. We're figuring out what to add, how to productize, et cetera. We have 14,000 members, sales, marketing, RevOps, regular programming from a monetization strategy. We have sponsors helping support us, thankfully, and thank you all sponsors. We have three full-time folks on board, soon to be a fourth, that we're paying. And we're looking at the next steps, and we're looking to fine-tune it, make it better, scale it up. And the goal is, and where we're at is to create like the de facto place for sales market, for revenue information and information, having questions asked, have that place. Right. And I say revenue, and it seems like the popular term it is. And you know, in this product-led growth world, we don't know what an SDR looks like tomorrow. As you're scaling the company, is you theoretically need less sales and marketing or less sellers in product-led growth. So that might be more of a RevOps person, but we want to be open to the evolution of the space role-wise.
Right. Well, so for people who aren't familiar with product-led growth, why don't you take them through that so they understand that?
Yeah, so product-led growth is the idea that the product sells itself. It's the idea that you don't need to scale it. You don't need hundreds of sellers. It's an experience top of funnel to bottom of funnel that is driven by the product and not by salespeople. You want to help expound, like, so, you know, it's not even a price point, because Tesla, I believe, is product-led growth, where you have specialists, you don't have outbound people really doing it. So like, it's not necessarily like a $6 a month Gmail account, which is very much product-led growth, but right. it could very well be a Tesla car, an $80,000, $100,000 car where they have more specialists answering it.
Right.
Answering questions, I should say. And product-led growth tends to be lower price points, subscription type of motions. You know, essentially organizations that aren't scaling the sales motion.
Yeah. Well, it's one of these ideas that's not
it's not fully hashed out. That's why I'm like, right.
Yeah. Well, it's not hashed out. It's not totally new. I mean, I think that it makes sense for a certain class of products. As you said, it's already happening. And we'll continue to see that. I mean, just look at, just in the last 30 years, you know, just the number of products that people can buy without talking to salespeople has gone up exponentially, right? But I still think that you run into the levels of complexity and risk really dictate whether people feel they need validation from salespeople about the decisions they're making.
So the question that I'll put back out is it a salesperson that gives the validation, or is it a product specialist that can answer those questions and help? A solution specialist of sorts.
Yeah. In the mind of the customer, does it really matter?
I think they'd prefer that it's not a salesperson. That's
Well, no, my point is one's a title, right? I mean, it's you're talking about what the qualifications need to be for the person in that role. Yep. And yeah, I mean, you could make the argument that, yeah, it doesn't need to be somebody that's sort of a classic salesperson at all. Right. Yeah, but I mean, that speaks to why do classic salespeople feel like they need to act like stereotypical salespeople? That really then becomes more the issue, right? Because we're talking about what the buyer experience is with someone that's helping them make a decision, right? So if you say, look, the buyer's goal I believe, you know, buyers in general, what they want to do is they want to quickly gather and make sense of the information they need in order to make a decision with the least investment of their time, attention, and resources. That's what buyers, ideally, that's what they want to do, right? They don't want to spend 6 months to make a decision they can make in three.
But the buyer's evolving, right? Like, how many years ago they needed to be tapped on the shoulder to be told what was out there? And today they know. They walk into the job. I need this product for call coaching, and I need Gong and Chorus. I'm going to call both of them in.
Ring DNA. I need to train my guests ahead of time. But Jess, go ahead.
So you know to call in Ring DNA, and maybe one other lesser competitor just to hold them, keep them honest on pricing and in terms. And you're reading about some new AI-driven open AI tools that could help with email. So you know you need a sales engagement product, but you also need something to help with emails because that's interesting. And you're bringing them in. It's a lot less frequent that a no-name, no-money company can just cold call and get a meeting, if they're in a space of massive incumbents. It's becoming harder and harder.
Well, they have to, that's a really interesting question, right? Because, and this is a question that's been posed, again, for a long time. Something that came up in the tech space for decades now. Sure. I've seen this pattern repeat itself, in similar in some respects, different in many others. But yeah, it's like, okay, well, how does a no-name, no-brand, no-money company break through and sell? And yet, it continues to happen all the time. It's just different, right? The challenge is very different. But I think your point that we were talking about before, I think, is really a good one, is... Yeah, what do sellers, what does a seller look like? Because I would make the case that, that's really in support of your point, is that we train people all wrong today and wonder why the buyer experience is considered bad and why they, surveys of C-level people say that their experience with salespeople is bad. This behavior that people find objectionable, that buyers find no value in, that's not innate human behavior, right? Being what I call salesy is not innate human behavior. It's learned behavior.
You mean when you show up to a pipeline meeting with not a full pipeline and you have somebody like breathing down your throat and now you're a little more aggressive the next week?
For instance. Or when you show up with a buyer and you, sure. Pitch before you understand. You rely on pushy, persuasive, manipulative techniques as opposed to, hey, let me find out what's most important to you and let me help you get that. Right?
But go on. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying we create this problem. We bemoan the fact that people aren't finding value in dealing with salespeople, but we created that monster and we continue to create that monster.
Agreed. I think part of the reason for this creation is some of the and it's 100% creation, but some of the tactics that worked 5 or 10 years ago, and let's be real, some of these have worked in the past, don't work now, and the people running sales sometimes don't change with the times as well.
Well, there certainly is that.
To put that kindly, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I believe, and I make the argument, that the things that make salespeople successful, consistently successful, and I'll say consistently good, right? I'm sort of don't like to indulge in this myth of the top performer. But people are consistently good, build a career in sales. I believe that they're winning based on sort of just very small number of core attributes that they embody that are more sort of human based skills, and that it's not from the conventional sales skills that we might be familiar with, but it's just lots around being a good person.
100%.
A little more nuance in that, but yeah.
So you know what's funny, like. We learn about techniques that are great, like gap selling, like understanding the problem, where the gap is and all of that. But what made me get into President's Club at a Fortune 100 company wasn't necessarily that. It was the engage part of our sales training. That's one of the part of the acronym, READY, research, engage. And I remember I had a director that said, which do you think is the most important? Some people would say it's the discover, but he circled the E for engage. And granted, it could be because of the market was established, the company was known, like that's all part of it, sure. But I sold the same product at the same price And I engaged and I showed value, but I don't remember asking the questions about like present state and future state. And like, we're like, maybe I did it in a different way, but like, I don't remember myself. I didn't read a true sales book until after I left. And I went into technology with, I went from having $45 billion and being a public company to having 1.5 million seed round without a sales force filled out, like an empty sales force having to figure out the ICP. And that's when I started my real modern day sales training. But anyway, I digress. But back then it was the Engage.
Sure. Well, I think why people sort of react to that is they somehow think like that's sort of the only thing. And the point I try to make to people is that that's the first step. But if you don't do that step well, there's no second step. And so you have to think about this just in terms of the progression, right? Is I would say, if you're going to boil it down to, is if your ability to engage, which you talked about, that was your job. Because, and you sort of have to think about it that way as a salesperson, because if you can't do that, the rest of it doesn't matter. Right? It's not that we can just be single thread and only be good at one thing, but you got to make sure you're good at this, because that's going to dictate your ability to get into and start having a conversation with people, connect on a human level, start building some credibility and trust for this raw startup you're working for that, you know, had no track record, no funding, whatever. Doesn't mean you don't have to be good at discovering qualification and everything else, but if you don't start at the beginning, and this is the part that sort of gets me when people talk about, oh, you know, relationships and sales, blah, 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 you know, these aren't important anymore, is they're really missing this fundamental point, is that the connection to a human is still important. And if you can't do that, then you're never going to be very good at the rest of it, because you're not going to get the opportunity, right? Doesn't mean it's not binary, right? It's not like we're not going to talk to you if you don't do it. It's just that, yeah, we need to talk to two or three vendors, so you come on in, but I'm not really paying attention to you. I'm paying attention to Jared.
Yeah, and I mean, so you know, bringing that Engage thing, and then you, let's say you're starting in a sales org where somebody day one gives you a script, tells you exactly how to be and all of this, and hammers you in front of everybody. And I remember before I was fortunate enough to work for the Fortune 100, I left what I realized now was an amazing opportunity. We had to say the same pitch, the same words, the same cadence in our talk in front of the whole company. Company's since been acquired twice, so what do I know, right? But and then once you did that, you're good on the phones. And literally the first thing I'd say is, hey, and you'd have to figure out how to put your ability to engage in that, and you'd be paralyzed until you could. And if that until lasted forever, you'd be paralyzed and you'd be not yourself and probably worse.
Well, but I think that's one of the issues that we see
it is.
In sales. And we see the research from Uncrushed and others about, you know, people feeling extremely stressed. You know, the recent poll is 75% of sellers feeling stressed or extremely stressed. Not granted, they're not all, you know, SDRs, but yeah, when you're forced to act in a way that isn't in alignment with who you are, you can only do that for so long.
I spoke to a good friend in our community. She just left her job after 4 months because it boiled up, and fortunately, they found a better situation for them.
Yeah, well, I think that's that. A lot of these issues are play. You know, I think again, you know, the whole idea of product-led growth is, you know, part of a dream on the part of senior-level managers. Is that, oh, we can do this without sellers? Oh, fantastic. And so, you know, I'll put it into context for you. So I had a client that I was doing sort of fractional work for, but it was ended up being sort of full-time. But about 3 or 4 years, startup, venture back, we raised, you know, so it was in the teeth of the 2008 financial collapse, we raised close to $20 million. But when you're going around talking to investors, this is 2007, 2008, a number of them said, sales is dead. We're never going to invest in a single company that requires salespeople. Now, this was 13 years ago, right? 14 years ago. We're never going to invest another. And what's happened since then? I know all those investors have gone invested in SaaS companies that are hiring more salespeople than ever. Sales employment, yep. Contrary to Forrester saying, yeah, we're going to lose 20% or 25% of sale B2B sellers by 2020. B2B sales employment's gone up.
Right now, it's hard to find a good salesperson on the market. Right now, yeah. They're well employed, and we need more. I hear it all the time.
Well, we do, right? So that's why I'm just context of the whole product led growth is people thinking. Oh, the theory in 2007 was every B2B product should be sold like it's on Amazon. Great idea, but it's not there.
I agree. I also think those same people are the ones that are like, oh, we need to hire a RevOps person now. Where is that? So what I'm trying to get at is, I think they're saying it without taking the necessary steps to do it. But I do think that if you're really all in on it, you can set yourself up for that ish. But I don't think in general people are thinking that way, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like you can't even buy a product on if you buy 10 products that cost over $10,000 a year. Can you buy 8 of them on that website? Like on their website? Can you even sign up for 8 trials? Or do they put you right into a funnel? Right now you're going to speak to an inbound rep. So you're not even going to speak to a full cycle person, right? They're going to give you 2 people. Maybe 3, but 2 probably, right? So that motion alone, some companies sure could have the argument they need it. I sense that some people do it because of what they've seen done
pressure,
in past
things. Peer pressure. Yeah. Oh, it's peer pressure.
That,
absolutely.
That motion alone is going against it. You could take that out. Like if somebody is ready to buy, if you've bought a CRM at the last 10 companies you've been at or 4, because, and exits, and you show up and you know exactly what you want, you know exactly how much it's going to cost. And if you don't, you know what you want. You know that it's going to integrate natively with 7 of your other things. You know you're going to need an API for 2 things, but you know it's good and you have the people to implement it. You can't even buy it without talking to a salesperson that at this point you know more than because you've bought it 4 times already and you've implemented it.
Well, I mean, I had conversation for years with people. It's like, and we're seeing companies now that are more and more, I think, and I'm interested in what you're seeing with your members is I'm seeing a trend toward more full cycle sellers again. Certainly in things that are more complex and more expensive and more strategic to the buyers. But it's sort of long past due in many of those cases because I remember having a conversation with a CEO is selling a complex product and he's talking about his sales organization and we got their SDRs, da da da. And this was a complex enterprise product.
Sure.
And I said, so let me make sure I get this straight. So you've got buyers for your product who have probably bought something similar before, to your point. They certainly are much more sophisticated about the product and the capabilities than similar buyer would have been 10 years before. They've got all the access information. And so when they finally have opportunity to talk with you, what you're going to do is have them talk to your least knowledgeable person. This is no knock on an SDR. It's just an entry-level position, right? We're gonna take this prospect for, it could be a big account, and give them to our least knowledgeable person. Interesting. And he just didn't see the problem with that. Mm-hmm. It's like you're creating friction.
Product specialist. Answer all the questions that could answer at a deep level.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me understand. When's the last time you implemented our solution or something like that? Oh, did you know about this? Based on your whole situation, your setup, how you do it, all your costs. We now have a native integration with RingDNA, and that'd be a great fit. See, I'm getting better at this. I'm getting better at this.
You learn quickly. I like that.
I'm getting better. That's that engaged part of the sales process.
That's the engaged part. Yeah, you're doing great on that part. I mean, it's certainly people, you're starting to see more stuff being written about this. You're certainly seeing more companies, I think, starting to embrace this idea that, yeah, for certain types of products and certain selling to certain types of ICPs, you know, at a minimum, you know, a team approach to that makes sense, right? And that the seller, as well as the SDR, are involved in developing new accounts and new business. And because when you have those early conversations, to your point, we all make decisions, right? When I talk to somebody who's trying to sell me something, and this has been studied, as you know, Nobel Prize winner Herbert Simon wrote about this, is we all make decisions about how we want to allocate slices of our attention. And we do that fundamentally based on this idea that that we get a return on that time and attention that we invest in somebody. And if we don't get a return on that time and attention, we don't allocate any more of our attention to it. So, perfect example, you know, went into a bike store once in Manhattan a number of years ago, wanted to buy a bicycle. It wasn't a big store. I spent, now out of business, by the way, no surprise. Yeah, I spent 5 minutes in the store, and there's no other customer in the store. Mm-hmm. And neither of the sales clerks there said a word to me in 5 minutes. And there was a bike there I wanted to buy, and not an inexpensive one. And I was just like, yeah, not worth my time. I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah.
And your customers do that to you all the time. You may not know that's what's happening, but they're doing it.
And, you know, back to the point of salespeople selling complex stuff and wanting the right person there and not the most seasoned and whatnot. Even when you have the most seasoned, I have a very good friend, a mentor of mine, mm-hmm. who runs the Americas for $1 billion company services. Okay. Mm-hmm. Background. Did some coursework in quantum computing in like Harvard, MIT.
Right.
Villanova MBA. Penn State with the undergrad. He realized he got smarter after. But, you know, I digress. he had a salesperson queue up a deal, $30,000 deal. And he went in. He's like, what do you really want with a major company? The deal turned to $600,000. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because of upsells at all, even though it appears like that on paper. It was because they understood the true problem, what they wanted to build. And somebody delivered it with a level of expertise and connection. And I'm not talking about a salesperson that sold complex. I'm talking about somebody that's integrated systems mm-hmm. that the buyer was like, you're right. I get it. And he's got the reputation around his company, which we'll keep hush here, but like to be like, you want to go on sales calls with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you go on there, here's what they say. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I think but you speak to several key points, right?
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that I think, I don't know, my take is sales has gotten smaller, right? And sort of quotes around smaller, meaning that you were always looking for the transaction rather than transformation as your mm-hmm. your friend sold. And yeah, I could speak firsthand experience with companies to say, yeah, it was just, you know, having a hard time finding bigger opportunities. That's like, well, there's reasons for that, right? One is you don't take the time to really do what your friend did, which is to really, and to use your words, really understand what the buyer wants to accomplish, right? And so, yeah, I like to boil sales down to something very simple.
And this is also a services sale where you could go in certain ways. I want to make this clear. This wasn't like three more seats in a CRM, so to speak.
Oh, sure. But you can also do the same thing in a CRM system as well. It's a matter of how you position what your offer is, right? But it's the step that we miss in sales too often is, and this is why I said I'd like to boil things down to very simple ways to think about it, is, yeah, you know, selling is really just about listening to understand what's the most important thing to the buyer and then help them get that, right? If you can achieve that, right? If you can make sure you understand, and what we do is we're so prescriptive these days and scripted in the way that we're selling, is that we gather a lot of information, but we don't really understand what it is the buyer wants to achieve, mm-hmm. right? We got a bunch of information, but we don't have no understanding. And your friend crossed that gap from knowing to understanding, and that's what unlocks the key to more transformational type deals, because then you start understanding what they really want to do.
And then engagement comes. That's the prime engagement.
Well, you need to have that engagement to make that happen. Yes.
True. But it also escalates engagement. Like, this person hears me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of being connected, right? Is this person hears me. But then the next step is this person understands me.
This is the
part we're missing too often in selling. And yeah, I was just telling somebody the other day about a deal that I worked on when working for a startup. We should never have gotten this deal. I mean, the dollar value of the deal was like equal to about a third of our revenue. So it's one of these deals that, you know.
That happens, really.
The good news, bad news is you got the deal. The bad news is you got the deal. It could have killed you.
Yep.
And it didn't. But we beat much larger competitors, multi-billion dollar companies for it. And the reason was the buyer just said, and it wasn't just me, as you know, the team of people with me that, you know, my technical experts and so on, they said, excuse me, you're the only ones who understood exactly what we're trying to do. That's why I got the deal, because they felt we understood them. And this is so overlooked in selling, is it's not enough to know, you need to understand.
You know what? Oh my gosh. Now I'm finally on the other end of the spectrum where people are selling to me. And I see it. I feel it. Oh mm-hmm. my gosh. I'm like, can I tell you what happened the other day? And I pointed out sure. to this gentleman, this is rich. And we are working with this company. I'll keep the names out. So I see it all the time, but this one took the icing of the cake. A services business contracting out for web development work. Okay. And like, we're all in. To get there, I did my research. I identified two groups that could potentially do this, right? That were qualified, were in our price range, all this. Mm-hmm. I identified one of the two that I'd prefer. And this is who I'm speaking mm-hmm. with. Okay. Just because they felt better. So we have the conversation talking about the scope. And it's going smoothly. It's well, we're just talking. And then at the end, he shows me his deck at the end, just to show me his deck. He's like, I just want to walk you through this, and shows me a race card slide with CVS on it. After we're already talking scope, I'm like, right. I pause him. I said, there was 9 to 12 logos on the race car slide. Two of them maybe spoke to us because they were startup incubators. Okay.
Right.
Two of them. Okay. Throw a startup incubator. Cool. But like, I'm in a mode in my mind where I want to convince them to take a lower than normal budget for me to work with them. And he's like, let me just show you the deck at the end of the call. Mm-hmm. And he shows the race car slide with like CVS on it. And I just said, stop. Like this, I know a little bit about sales. I know a lot, but this seems weird. Like, this is not relevant to me. You had me. We're going through the scoping process. Why are you showing me this? Let alone understand the whole project.
Right.
That's the next thing.
Right.
And this is our first call. He's like, let me – oh, my God. Andy, I was like, wow, this happens.
Well.
like this happens. I'm like, I actually think less of the company than I was going to – and then somebody else just kept, like, scoping everything. But, like, they weren't listening to the big points. And they were just saying – like recaps of what we talked about. And I didn't give a shit about what we talked about. I cared about maybe one of the items. And then we had this much extra that I didn't care about. Like that made me think less of the whole interaction.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be discouraged,
and these people were probably good.
Well,
compared to what's out there.
Right. I have. Yeah, we do. We publish 150 podcast episodes a year.
Sure.
I probably get 1,000 emails from people that want to be on the show a year.
Absolutely.
And these are people who are, leading lights in our profession.
Sure.
And 99% of them are just horrible. It's just astonishing. And we think, yet everything that's written, and on your website, you've got, in your blog, you guys, all this information and stuff about top of funnel and techniques, sure. And it's like, it's still uniformly bad. It's just like, are we not paying attention to what we're writing? Are we not utilizing it? Is it? But people reach out, to me that, clearly haven't done any research at all. They don't. It's the basics, right? And I know if they're doing it to me, they're doing it in the outreach and work that they're doing with prospects. Name wrong, name of the podcast wrong. I've got a list of like 10 things that go down. It's like,
and this isn't even a dollar amount sale.
Yeah, I know. And you think that if you're a sales expert, supposedly wanting to talk about sales on a leading sales podcast, that you'd put your best foot forward. And so I look at that and say, if they're doing this for me, what are they doing for their prospects? All of which saying we need rev genius. We need people to be a part of it.
So, what are they doing to their prospects? What are they doing to the people they manage?
Well, yeah.
Right? Like, you want to talk about and now you're seeing the need for rev genius even more. Like, the problem is, if it was just their prospects, their prospects wouldn't meet with them, and that would be okay. And they would learn, hopefully, or they'd be out of a job. Mm-hmm. When they don't have prospects and there's individual contributors that are reporting to them, or managers that they're training to train individual contributors, that's when the domino effect and mm-hmm. Really gets bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we should only hope that they talk to prospects directly, because then they only impact one person. Or at a time.
Yeah. Well, that have to be a separate conversation when we talk about that. I mean, I think that and I've made this point on the show before, is that managers are too quick to point the finger at salespeople when mm-hmm. salespeople don't perform up to expectations, when the analysis and the assessment has to start with them, themselves, because that's where the problem originates. I mean, we bring people into a profession and have the responsibility to train them the right way and to act mm-hmm. in the right way. And we're not doing that very successfully. But somebody has to take responsibility for that. I mean, we see all these reports about, I read one yesterday that was in a book, somebody quoting a statistic that, 80% of sales reps don't make quota every year. The last figure I'd seen was 50, but 50, 80, whatever, right? It's a big number. Well, who's responsible for that? See, I don't think it's purely the seller. I mean, I think if you're running a factory, so you're building cars, and only 50% of the cars work in order to drive away from the dealership when they're purchased, that's your problem as the production manager, right? Mm-hmm. Well, as a sales manager, aren't you producing a salesperson? Isn't that part of your job? You're helping shape and form and produce this person and making them capable of doing the job that's assigned to them. So where else would you be able to survive when you had a 50% failure rate or an 80% failure rate?
I'm doing founder-based sales right now myself. Which all the new founders, not all, and we'll talk about that, but like most new founders know it well. I could see it clearly because I'd like to think I'm perceptive. I see like where the gaps are. I see where, the whole process where I could be doing better, but mostly where the process could be doing better and learning. And now I spoke to, a young company I advise. And the founder, CEO, 3 months ago asked me about, you know, who he should target. You know, he's thinking about, it's a direct-to-consumer B2C type product, but he realizes like real estate buildings and like, because they have multiple units there, might be a good avenue. And he closed a deal, an inbound deal. And he's like, that was $4,000 or $5,000 a month. I'm like, great. I can help you here. Like we could talk about this. 3 months ago, I'm like, we're talking ICP, all of this. And he calls me out of nowhere. He's like, let's talk. I'm like, what have you done in the last 3 months? Nothing. He's like, I want to hire somebody. I'm like, how are you going to hire somebody at a wage you could barely afford, if that, with a process you've never done yourself? You don't know what's there. And then we just started talking again. I'm like, instead of taking this time with me now, why don't you call 10 people in the ICP? Oh, my brother has it, the list or whatever. Like, he's like, the last 3 months I've been managing engineers. Mind you, not an engineer. Right. Not an engineer. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, well, you run a company called Rev Genius, so revenue is first for you. I said, it's first for your investors too, sir. like what right. What are you? So the point I'm trying to make, you kind of see, like, when you start like that, and he's not the only one, unfortunately. No. Probably not. And you hire somebody, you expect them to do something you've never done before, and processes and all this. He asked me for a recommendation for a salesperson. I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I am not going to give you a sitting duck. I'm not going to give you a sitting duck. I'm like, I refuse to give you a sitting duck. you make it a situation that I feel good that they have a chance in heck to last 6 to 9 months in. I said, you and I both know he or she is out in 3 months. Mm-hmm. If you could afford that. I'm like, I'm not giving you that person. Sorry. But anyway, that's a whole other, like,
well, no, but that's,
I'm trying to do a favor to the person I would have gave. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No, it speaks to a couple issues. One is, founders have to engage in selling because they have to learn how they sell their product, right? And why their product gets sold.
Yep.
They don't know that. Yeah. They're not in any position to hire somebody. But also speaks to this issue, which is that things just don't really change that much. And some of these same challenges are going to remain challenges regardless of how much technology we apply to sales, right? This idea of engagement, connection, curiosity, understanding that we talked about, intuition, synthesis, lots of sort of these human qualities that make a huge difference in your ability to inspire someone to want to do business with you. Technology is not really going to help in many of those cases. Those are uniquely human attributes. And we still confront those same challenges year after year after year, decade after decade after decade. That's why I sort of give people a hard time when they talk about modern selling. It's like, sure, we got modern attributes to the selling, but at heart, it's still fundamentally the same thing. And we're not getting any better at the basics that dictate how well we do ultimately. And I think that's the big challenge. That's one of the things, reason I'm excited about communities like Rev Genius and others is that there perhaps we can start building this sort of continuity from era to era about these basics, right? Because in the absence of these communities, it's like every time we get a new cohort into sales, we're recreating the wheel.
You're right.
And maybe, like I said, I think the positive aspect of these communities that have sprung up in the last number of years is that, maybe we create this continuity of sales culture and understanding about what's important so that people can sort of engage in it and come up to speed more quickly.
100%. And we think that they're not always getting it where they work. Some people are fortunate enough, so have the community there. And then also right now we're, here's the new challenge that came out. So now you're not getting it where you work. Where are you going? I go to LinkedIn. LinkedIn. I reach out to my prospects there, but now I consume content. I learn everything on LinkedIn. And then the people that are producing it, maybe once upon a time were the best. And so there's so much noise is what I'm trying to get at. So like mm-hmm. you have a community now, but then you have a layer of noise. So it's hard enough in that maze to figure out that like there's some basic things and maybe you're not getting it here. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking in the World Wide Web. And if you're listening to this podcast, you have a LinkedIn account, I'm sure. ICP, yes. Right? Like, yes. And maybe even you log in a few times a week. And you're picking the content for you based on likes, maybe comments, maybe echo chamber, mm-hmm. maybe all the above. And it may be okay, but like there's so much noise and you don't know which Patreon to join, which whatever. And so now you actually have more resources than you did 5-10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But you don't know which are the right ones and which aren't. So how, you know, this brings another thing. And this is, you know, in the next evolution of Rev Genius, you know, from Slack into a more product, this is something that we're really, really intrigued with, but like hellbent focused on. Like, how can we educate, empower, inspire our mission and make it so that, one, everybody has a space. So even the people that, you know, the echo chambers, because you can't be biased against anybody. And but how do you surface up what's right? And maybe you can. I don't know. These are interesting questions.
Well, yeah, because what's right?
I mean, like who are we to like, well, because I spent a month off of LinkedIn, I know something because I closed $1 million deal in services, I know SaaS. Maybe not.
Well, but I think
I question everything. Yeah.
As do I. And so, and yeah, I write about that quite a bit, is question everything. Is that, yeah, I've had extremely successful career, reinvented myself a number of times, been successful in all of those. But what works for me may not work for everybody else. This is, yeah, I resist this idea that we can somehow decide what's right or what's not on LinkedIn. It's who knows where the next good idea is going to come from? Who knows who has the new best new perspective that comes out? LinkedIn to me is a marketplace of ideas, and people have a chance sort of to vote by their support or lack of support of the ideas that are out there. We may not like all the ones that get supported, and there are reasons, you know, for that. But you know, I think we're better off as a result. But I agree, what's still the fundamental problem is, if you're approaching LinkedIn, how do you surf through to find the things that you think might be relevant to you and your situation, what works best for you? And I think your community helps filter that somewhat.
Well, I think
it's okay for the communities to have a point of view, and should have a point of view, and you pick your community accordingly.
Agreed. I think the general technology basis of having algorithms that serve you up certain content based on interactions versus not having that, right? You could have the same content in two things, and I truly agree that. But if you have something served up, psychologically, there's something with that. If you just have something upvoted, that's it. Mm-hmm. Not anything more than upvote. Let's look at Reddit as the obvious example.
Right.
I think just in that technology alone, and you see where I'm going with my mind, like just that simple feature, you could help serve up crowdsourced good content. Crowdsourced. Yeah. Is it good or not? It's the crowd deciding and not the algorithms. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, it's not going to be perfect, Andy. And in fact, if it is, it's not making enough money, and God forbid there's a VC behind it, and that's a whole nother thing, because then all of a sudden it goes to
it changes. Yeah, substantially, yeah.
And I fully support VCs and everything, but there's, you know, a lot of revenue driven goals that come out.
Yeah. That may or may not be aligned with the goals of the company. So
yeah.
All right.
But thank you.
Jared, we're gonna have to
thank you for your time.
Oh, and that's been fantastic. So if people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
So LinkedIn.com/in/JaredRobin. And I don't scare from email, Jared@revgenius.com. Pretty straightforward. If you're going to pitch me something, make it good, though.
There we go.
Thank you.
As we talked about earlier. All right, connect Jared, thank you. And we'll look forward to doing this again. We didn't touch any of the questions that I had to ask you. We just got off on our tangent. That was great. So look forward to having you come back.
I am so grateful for your time, Andy. This has been truly an honor. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for sharing your time. Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, Jared Robin, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.